Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Well, finally today, I want to bring you something beautiful and inspiring. Amanda Gorman's poetry has been described as driven by a keen ear and a sharper intelligence, and as celestial, prophetic, shining, and as captivating without performance. And get this. She's 18 years old. She's a Harvard student, and she's America's first youth poet laureate. It's a relatively new honor, first created last year, backed by the President's Committee on the Arts and Humanities, the Library of Congress, and the Poetry Society of America and others. And Amanda Gorman joins us now in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So I should say that we should have talked to you last year, because your term as Youth Poet Laureate is coming to an end pretty soon.
It is. It ends at the end of April.
Okay, but I'm glad that we got you. Better late than ever. So tell me a little bit about being Youth Poet Laureate. How has it been, and what has it meant?
It's fantastic. In many ways, I say that I feel like the little who's on the clover that are like, I'm here to the big elephant, because a lot about it is really advocating for poetry and letting people know that this position exists, because it has not historically before. What that looks like is talking with a lot of students and teachers around the country, writing a lot, and just doing whatever I can to increase access to poetry.
How'd you first fall in love with poetry?
Ooh, in third grade, I was 8. My teacher, Shelley Fredman, was reading Dandelion Wine by Ray Bradbury, and there was a metaphor in there that blew my mind. I ran home, and I was like, I want to be a writer, straight to my mom. And she was like, wow, great that you know that so soon. But that was a really magical moment for me.
Wow, okay. And you have a poem that's named Dandelion Wine.
Yes.
Okay. So clearly the inspiration was deep there. Can you read a little bit of that poem?
I would love to. I'll read a quick excerpt from that. Our people have met centuries with their bodies entombed under the coastline of a ribcage, pelvic shore. Below waves, they shine our bodies in Vaseline to breathe quiet into our pores. Homi nila kowu, homi nila kowu, hecked the crows, the sound chasing the stars. We have a saying, vide neyungu vasila obona. Don't shoot, brown trees put their hands up, afraid of death, but more so life. You see, branches and roots are the same, I found. Trunks don't rise, they're just wise enough to fall into the sky. Away, away, we are grounded in the absence of ground. We be free, be poet, we be poet tree, be poetry. Homi nila kou, we sing, splitting open the sky as light unfolds back into our mouths.
That is Dandelion Wine, read by Amanda Gorman. It's her original poem. She is the U.S. Youth Poet Laureate. Beautiful. Really.
Thank you.
Can you tell me a little bit more about, since you did mention the Ray Bradbury, was this poem directly inspired by that? Is there a link between the two?
There are so many threads in this poem. It was one, thinking about my connection with poetry, obviously, but also partly thinking about sound and my struggle with a speech impediment, which got me writing in the first place, and also trying to tie that to my heritage in the African diaspora. Yeah. So there's just a networks of threads going in there. So definitely it being named Dandelion Wine is kind of an homage to that original inspiration.
Yeah. I mean, so talk to me more then about, as you said, talking about the story of the African diaspora, mm-hmm. through your poetry. Mm-hmm. How important has that been in terms of the verse that you choose to, that you write?
Mm. It's been critical for me. When I started writing, it was a lot from reading a lot of stories that didn't reflect characters that looked and or sounded like me. And then I got to this kind of post-Toni Morrison phase where I read The Bluest Eye, and I realized it was possible to have prose and poetry and fiction that centered around a black girl. And that was very exhilarating for me. So now whenever I write poetry, the thought is kind of, who is being left out of the literature and how can I include that in my own poetics.
Okay. So does that mean that poetry has always been very political for you?
Yes. And I also say that I think that everything is political. So that's an interesting topic for me. My poetry is political, but I think all art is political in its own shape and form.
So what do you think that poetry... Is there a particular thing that poetry can do in terms of being a political voice that maybe other art forms... I won't say can't do, but mm-hmm. poetry does it differently, yeah, right? Yeah, because words are mm-hmm. Words are mm-hmm. what make the poem.
Mm-hmm. I think that poetry does a very fantastic and special job in teaching us the power of words over violence, and also about how to use kind of the potential of language to create social change, specifically poetry compared to, for example, prose, because poetry is already rebellious. When I'm writing a poem, I know I don't have to stick to specific grammar rules. It's okay if my line breaks here. I'm automatically kind of in my own resistance of the traditions of the literary form, which I think is very kind of magical about the work of poetry that it does.
Yeah. Now, you and I were at the Mass Poetry Society event not that long ago.
Throwback.
And Langston Hughes came up a couple times there. And the reason why I mention it now is because the other thing I think poetry does with absolute genius, right, is that, like, essential distillation of the core meaning of really big questions, right? So in Langston Hughes' case, what happens to a dream deferred, right? Like, just the asking of the question and the way that the poet and the poem asks that question, everyone stops and wonders when they're confronted with it. And I think that's one of the amazing things that poetry does. Now, let me ask you, so again, back to your duties as youth poet laureate, have you traveled a lot? I mean, what have you done?
Yes, I travel a lot. I don't know how that gets done with school.
Oh, somehow you're a Harvard student at the same time.
Somehow I'm enrolled at Harvard University, but I travel a lot. For example, over the summer, I did a national poetry tour where I went to Hawaii, Chicago, New York, just all around the United States because I wanted to meet with as many students as possible and get really a feel on the pulse of poetry in the United States. Other than that, every other day at school, I'm traveling into Boston or outside of it to try to meet with as many people.
So a lot of work, but worthy work.
Oh, definitely.
Now, you're finishing up again your term in April. Mm-hmm. Is there going to be a second Youth Poet Laureate?
Yes, there will. I don't get a say in who it gets to be. I don't think so. But there will be a second one, so keep an eye out for whoever takes the torch.
Okay. And it's an application process? Like, you apply to...
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, so for folks who are interested, we're going to put a link on radioboston.org to the website that can get you to apply. But last question here. I read, even though you're in love with poetry and clearly have power with words, that maybe politics might be something you want to dive into more directly in the future?
Oh, yes. Not maybe. I'm running for president in 2036.
Got to find out.
Yes. That year, because that is the year I will be old enough to run and also be an election year.
Fantastic. Well, Amanda Gorman is a student at Harvard University, and she's also the inaugural American Youth Poet Laureate. It's been such a pleasure to speak with you. Congratulations and thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Well, that's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.